Welcome to Move Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Clapson. The aim of this podcast is to explore, learn, and spread the message of rewilding and natural movement so that we as humans can live in more alignment with our nature and reclaim what it means to be fully alive. The modern world has stripped away so much that used to nourish our mind, body, and soul. This podcast will help illuminate how we can reclaim and restore our innate, wild, capable, and strong spirit. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Move Wild Podcast. I hope you're all well, happy, healthy, and thriving. So before I share who my guest is on today's show and we get into that conversation, I wanted to let you guys know how you can support and become a part of what I'm doing. So right now I'm connecting and gathering together a tribe around this vision of creating retreats, bringing together many of the principles and practices shared on this podcast. These retreats are going to be centered around community, rewilding, ancestral living skills, and natural movement. My aim is to create a culture that honors and celebrates the connection humans innately have to the natural world. This is a community project, and your support goes a long way toward making this vision a reality. So what I want you to do is head over to Indiegogo via the link in the show notes, or head over to purchase early bird tickets also via the link in the show notes. Indiegogo, you can support me there and find out how you can support outside of also financial contribution, or if you want to become a part of these retreats and participate in one of these retreats, which I'll be running next year, you can head over and follow the link to get the early bird tickets. So if you're as keen as I am to make this vision a reality, head over and do that now, and your support is much appreciated. So all right, onto today's show. Today I had the pleasure of speaking with Wania from Buckskin Revolution. Wania is a naturalist, craftsperson, and ancestral skills instructor, and her greatest ambition and joy is striving to be a wilder human. Wania's work through her business, Buckskin Revolution, is to help people feel connected to their wildest, freest selves and to the living world around them. She believes that practicing ancestral life skills in the context of our globalized, mechanized world is an important and revolutionary act. She teaches a wide range of topics, sharing skills that help people feel empowered to make and do more things for themselves and to feel more connected to their human ancestors and the living world around them. Gathering and growing our own food, making the clothes we wear from the resources in the woods around us, learning to understand what the birds are saying about the movements of our other creatures in the forest are a few examples of the skills she teaches. Wania teaches through in-person classes, her YouTube channel, speaking engagements, and the book she is currently writing. In 2018, Wania had the opportunity to put her decades of practicing these skills to the test on season 6 of Alone on the History Channel. She spent 73 days on her own in the Arctic, living off hunting, gathering, and trapping. Her time out and coming in as the runner-up in an extreme survival competition are a testament to not only the physical skills she teaches, but the importance of the deeper skills of connection, gratitude, curiosity, communication, positivity, and reciprocity. Wania believes that these skills and the life ways are an important part of our human heritage and should be available to all of us. They speak to that place inside of us that remembers what it feels like to know the world around us intimately, to shape the substance of our lives from the raw materials around us. They remind us what it is to be human and connected to the wild within and around us. With a master's degree in environmental science and 25 years of study and practice of ancestral lifeways, Wania works to bridge the practical hands-on skills for land-based living with a deeper understanding of and love for the natural world. The Buckskin Revolution is not just about making buckskin clothing or harvesting wild foods or survival skills. It is about inspiring and enabling people to do more for themselves and to be freer, healthier, wilder, and more connected human beings. So this was a really great conversation. I am looking forward to seeing what you guys think of it. So let's jump into it. Listen in after the show for how you can connect with Wania, how you can connect with me, and what's going on with me.
All right. Thank you so much, Wania, for coming on the podcast today.
My pleasure.
So to start with, I'd like to get a little bit about you and your backstory and how you got into this world of ancestral skills and what you do today.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny because a lot of people ask me like what got me into them, but I don't ever remember a time that I wasn't into them. which isn't to say that I was raised with them, because I totally wasn't. But, you know, like all of the books I was drawn to as a kid, all of my childhood games, you know, I was just writing a couple days ago about how I always wanted to gather things. I didn't even know what I would do with them. Like, I would gather all of the bark off of the manzanita bushes in the spring because I heard you could make tea out of them. I never drank it. I didn't even like tea. But just that idea of engaging with the world around me and like having that be what my work was just always a part of me. And then also, you know, I grew up spending a lot of time outside. My mom was in the Sierra Club and my dad was an endurance runner. So I was always getting dragged out on trails every weekend with one parent or the other. And to me, I had both this drive to learn about the natural world and then to really engage with it. And I was very crafty from the time I was a kid. I was, you know, like sewing clothes for my dolls and crocheting this and that and just making stuff up myself. Also, I'm an only child, so I learned to entertain myself a lot, you know, like there weren't kids to play with necessarily, so it was me just coming up with stuff to do. And so I feel like the ancestral skills are this perfect marriage between this engagement with the wild around me and the handcrafts and that drive to create. And then also, you know, I went to school for biology, so I also have this formal education in the natural science. I have a master's degree in environmental science. So it's like all of these fields that I feel like so many people feel are separate, to me, they just have a natural merging place. And I think that part of why they're so compelling to me is because they're what I evolved to do.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I'm supposed to do. All of my genetics drive me to engage with the world in this way. So, you know, that's kind of like a longer, more global answer. But the shorter answer too is that I went to school for biology and was doing a lot of field courses, and chose a field course one summer that involved, that the teachers had done some ancestral skills. And I chose it on purpose because I was so ready to dive into that. And then they told me about one of these gatherings. At that time, it was the only gathering that was happening anywhere on the, you know, the Western US. And so I went to that as a 19-year-old. And before that time, it was like, oh, I wish I lived in a time where this was available to me. I wish that I could do these things, but I didn't actually feel like it was reality. And then I got introduced to this world of people who were doing it and teaching it. And I never looked back. I mean, I dove in headlong from that point on.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Like the fact that you were immersed in it from such a young age and you had that interest. And I definitely resonate with the idea, like, it's in your genetics. Like I've definitely felt that. It's like, this just feels natural. It's not that I came across it. It was within me.
Yeah.
Definitely hearing that. So can you give us an idea of what some of these skills are, some examples of what and what they mean to you? Like, what do ancestral skills mean to you? What do you define them as?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the main part of it is that they're very land-based. They're all about, you know, engaging deeply with the natural world around you and learning how to get the things that you need for your life from those resources. So that looks like, you know, wild foods and, you know, medicinal plants as well, and, you know, basketry and containers and shelter. And, you know, I focus a lot on hide tanning and animal processing and, you know, putting, so to me, I like to focus on teaching those skills that people can use in their daily lives. And that looks like, you know, food, water, shelter, clothing, containers as kind of the basics. So, you know, from a primitive skills perspective, that's going to be wild foods and, you know, different styles of shelter and hide tanning for clothing and making cordage from plant fibers and then using those to create, you know, to stitch together the baskets out of bark that you can put that food you're gathering in. And just in every way, kind of unplugging from this industrialized modern concept that the things that we depend on are things that we have absolutely no connection to. We couldn't trace them back to their origin and they come from a factory, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's so interesting. So much of the modern technology we have no idea how to make it, how to use it, where it comes from, like what went into creating it. So I really love that idea of breaking from dependence with the modern world. Like learning these skills so that we're no longer dependent on this thing that we don't really understand in many ways. That's cool.
Yeah, and to me, it's not just the fact that we are feeding ourselves with things from the land around us. I mean, even if you live in the city and you don't get to do that, still having the skills, knowing that you know how to, shift something in your perspective. And I actually had a woman who had done a 4-month live-in program with me write me just as Corona was going big and say, "Well, Nia, you know, that program I did with you has completely changed my life. I haven't done any of those things since that course, but I'm not freaking out the way everyone in the world around me is freaking out right now." Yeah. So it's what it does for us as people to feel whole and connected, and not just that we are living in a hut in the woods cutting up animals with stone points, you know.
Sure. So it gives us that sense of confidence of like, if I need to, I can rely on these skills and I can rely on myself. It doesn't matter what's going on around me. I like
right
that.
Yeah, so, and just being more in touch with what we actually need to survive, because you know, 99% of the things that people fill their lives and their time with really are not necessary, and being out and surviving on just what you have to have just puts that into perspective and shifts you from taking everything for granted and feeling entitled to it to recognizing that it's all just fluff, you know. Yeah. Or the vast majority of it is unnecessary fluff.
Totally. I imagine that would give you definitely a sense of gratitude and perspective on life. And
that's it. You know, I've been teaching a lot lately, not the hard skills, but just that connection is a survival skill, and knowing how to feel at home in the wild, that's the most important ancestral skill, more than friction fire, more than knowing this or that plant.
Yes, I love that, because when you have that feeling of feeling a lot at home in the wild, you can go out and be curious and maybe develop those skills. Whereas if you feel like an alien in that world, doesn't matter if you have the skills necessarily, you won't be able to live there for as long.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. So why do you think, I mean, we've kind of touched on this, but if you could give your like spiel on why do you think it's important for people to learn these skills, and what would your response be to someone who would say, oh, these skills aren't really relevant in the modern world?
You know, it's funny, I've been writing a lot since coronavirus got big, because to me, like, I have been trying for the last 25 years to convince people why they're relevant, and most people have dismissed most of that, you know. And now the world is showing us why it's relevant, because, you know, we depend on these systems that we assume are stable, and they're so fragile, you know. Yeah. They're so fragile, and now we're seeing just how fragile they are. So right now is like a very unique point in history where I'm not actively trying to convince people why it's relevant. I feel like that's happening. If you're paying any kind of attention, you're already getting that.
Yeah.
But that said, why do I think they're important for people beyond just, you know, we could have a global pandemic and you could not be able to leave your town, and wouldn't it be nice to know what food is in your backyard? But it's more about, like, I look at the psyche of modern people, you know, and I feel like if you look at health and mental health in particular, people have been going downhill pretty steadily since civilization, and especially, you know, the rate of change in the last 50 years with the information age, it's shifting people, and we're seeing, you know, people being so much less healthy and less happy, and desperately trying to connect through their devices and through their social media, but not recognizing that that's not how we evolved to connect. And our bodies, you know, it took us millions of years to evolve to what we are. And these changes in technology have happened in the last 50 to 100. Like, we're not remotely equipped physically, psychologically, emotionally to deal with the modern world. And so I think these skills are so important for just basic sense of well-being, for mental health, you know, and for emotional well-being, you know, the skills to really, like you said, be curious, you know, to not feel like you have to know what's out there, but just go out into the woods with a sense of wonder and curiosity. That's amazing for people. It shifts you so profoundly. So I think people need these skills. Like, I think that they are what we evolved to do, and a lot of the ills that we see in modern society are because of the divorce people have from the world around them. And it's you know, gonna go bad if we don't shift that. And I pray and pray that the coronavirus is waking people up and gonna be a powerful force for shifting that.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. It seems that we live in a world of biological mismatch where our body has not evolved and is not designed for this kind of false sense of connection that we have through social media, as you mentioned, through all these different modern technologies. And the further that we get away from our roots, the more sickness that we seem to have. What would you say is the biggest difference that you see in, say, like a modern, quote unquote, domesticated mindset and more of an ancestrally aligned wild mindset?
The biggest thing that I see is people outsourcing their basic needs, yeah. You know, and that not just, you know, food and water and shelter, but like everything, like emotionally, I feel like that's as well. Like, what can I take in? What can I consume, you know, yeah, to help me feel okay? Because I don't feel okay because I'm not actually getting the things that I evolved to make me feel okay, which is, you know, connection and sense of place and knowing that I have the ability to do things for myself. So, you know, I see it in so many ways, just in terms of choosing to think for oneself and question rather than just, you know, take the tube and suck in all that we're being fed culturally, societally, you know, and, you know, literally in terms of food and medicine and yada, yada, you know, like just this, I have been trying to put out more. I don't normally make medicine for money. Well, I have a little bit, but you know, herbal medicine. And right now I'm doing that more. And some of the people who I love, who I'm making it for, they're like, oh, well, don't bother. I wouldn't take it. Yeah. And it's like, well, we actually don't have the choice to outsource our healthcare right now. The hospitals are going to be full. What are you going to do? Really? Like, you would not take in something that you can do for yourself because you'd rather go to a hospital, even knowing that there's not space for you in the hospital and they can't help you. Yeah. So it's a mindset that I think is bigger than any of the hard physical things.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with all of that. And it seems that we have lost the ability to think for ourselves, and like we outsource our emotional well-being and we outsource our ability to think to like everything else other than ourselves. It's a very interesting world we live in. So shifting now, you were recently featured on the show Alone. Could you share with us a bit about your experience on that show and what was that whole experience like? It seemed extremely like intense.
Yeah. You know, it was definitely intense and amazing. And it's really interesting having so many people, you know, feel a part of my journey when I know that the parts of my journey that were shown were just the teeniest sliver, yeah, and weren't the parts that were most significant and meaningful to me. So, you know, it's a huge question. It was, you know, a big journey involving a lot of things. But for me, the biggest part of it was just really getting to apply a lifetime of studying these skills. And I've done, you know, I've done primitive trips and I've done, you know, a lot of backpacking and camping and spending time in wilderness, but to just be dropped in a foreign place with so few things to just be there as long as you can make it, yeah, that was a pretty unique experience. And it was amazing to me to actually get to put into practice all of these things and see that, in fact, I am really capable. You know, like, you don't know what you're capable of until you're really tested like that. So it was, I mean, the most amazing, empowering journey ever. And I'm also a person who really, I thrive on challenge. You know, I can push myself really hard, as we've spoken a bit, how hard I'm pushing myself to put out content right now and share all of this stuff with the world. And so there's part of me that kind of gets off on extreme and hardship. And so like, the fact that I was in the Arctic right as winter was coming on was really intense, but there was a part of that that was so perfect and so beautiful for me. And, you know, the biggest parts of that journey for me were not the challenge or the struggle or the discomfort. It was the beauty. And those are the parts I feel like didn't come through in the way the show was edited as much. Some of it was, but you know, it's a television show. So it's like the more dramatic things that are going to be, that are going to be shown. And, you know, like every single day I went down to the shore or somewhere where I could see the lake, and I sung the sun down into the lake. And that was such an important daily ritual. And every Thursday was my dance party day. And I always made a time to like go out and dance, whatever that looked like. And they showed that once, you know, they showed like little teeny snippets of that. But the sense of connection and joy and gratitude that I felt out there, I didn't feel like that came across how I wanted it to or how much I hoped it would. And just, you know, kind of like we've been talking about, like, I've been studying these skills for so long and wanting to experience what it is to live as a wild creature on a landscape, but I've never had anything like the complete, you know, total depth of the experience of that, just like completely immersed in that. Like I have such a different understanding for what it is to be a wild animal on the landscape, where every choice you make, you know, your survival hinges on it, and what it is to be in such deep need for nourishment in my body. You know, there are people who go hungry in the modern world, for sure. I'm not saying there isn't hunger, but the type of hunger that you experience in an extreme thing like that, where there is no grocery store and there is no dumpster, and it's, you know, it's you and the world, and you may or may not make it based on your skills. It was amazing. It completely changed, you know, the way I see myself, the way I see my world, you know, the way I've handled the coronavirus, because the things that I might have thought were important to have on hand now are different than, you know, what I might have thought a couple years ago. And now, like, I recognize that fat is the most important thing in the entire world.
Yeah, totally. Calorie rich. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, it must have put a lot of things into perspective, that experience. I'm curious, how long were you actually out there for?
73 days.
73 days. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a long time. You know, there were ways that it felt like a long time, and there were ways that it felt like a heartbeat, you know, because also I've just never been able to be so present in every moment as I was out there. You know, I had absolutely no capacity to engage with the outside world or other humans. So my sense of time, you know, and like schedules and all of that stuff. So I, you know, I was aware of time passing, and of course I was filming it all. And so that kept, you know, there were clocks on the cameras, but yeah, there were ways where it felt so timeless because I was just in it every minute.
Yeah, for sure.
I wasn't blogging about it and I wasn't posting about it. I was just living it.
Yeah, you're just living it. You were just being. That's amazing. What was some of the food that you did get when you were out there?
Well, you know, I was definitely starving most of the time. I didn't, probably no single day did I eat as many calories as I was spending, you know, as I was using. But I had, you know, spells where I wasn't bringing in as much food, and then where I would do better. But my main calorie sources certainly were rabbits and squirrels. Okay. And I also was, there were a couple different types of berries there, and I was harvesting and eating a lot of those. And those were really more nutrition than calorie. You know, there was so little calorie in that, but there was fiber and there was vitamins and important things. But yeah, basically just rabbits and squirrels.
Yeah, wow. Did you trap them or like how?
Yeah, I shot a grouse and a squirrel with my bow, actually back to back. The show didn't show that, but I had shot a squirrel an hour before I shot the grouse, which was, and that was the first time I had gotten any game. And then I got two back to back. And so that was like, to me, that was the moment that I knew that the land wanted me there and that I had like passed the test, because I'd been starving for weeks and still so thrilled and happy to be there. And to have both of those things happen back to back was amazing. But then, you know, I was in an area, I was on a little peninsula, and it was not very resource rich. There was no big game. There was no fishing. And there were very few grouse actually. But yeah, I started trapping the third week, and that made a huge difference. But I hadn't brought snare wire. All I had was fishing line, which meant that my traps had to be, you know, much more elaborate. And it meant that the rabbits, you know, 90% of the time they would just nip my traps out of the way because they were fishing line. So they could. So it was like, you know, 10 times more effort, if not more, just to be trapping than it would have been if I had brought snare wire.
Yeah, right. Interesting. What was some of the equipment that you brought in, and what was some of the stuff that you made when you were actually out there?
Yeah, great question. I couldn't believe how little they showed of the things that I made out there. Like, crafting was a big part. But so you could bring 10 items, and I chose one of those was food, and it was only 2 pounds of food. It was a little bag of pemmican, which to me, only food that was worth bringing out there. They had a bunch of options that I thought were very silly, but I brought pemmican. So I brought 2 pounds of pemmican, and then I brought a cook pot, a sleeping bag, a ferro rod, a knife, a belt knife, carbon steel. I brought a Leatherman, a folding saw, fishing line and hooks, and my bow and 9 arrows. We were allowed a bow and 9 arrows. And what am I forgetting? Probably another tool. I went definitely heavy on the tools. Cook pot, ferro, I'll think of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of what I made out there, I mean, my shelter was a huge part of my time and energy, and I had a lot of plans for things to make that didn't come to fruition because it took so much of my time just trying to, you know, bring in firewood and check my traps. Once I was trapping, that was where most of my daylight hours went, and it was the Arctic, so by the time I left, there were about 4 hours of workable daylight a day. Wow. So that, you know, was really limiting, but and then also it was below freezing, you know, as of, you know, a couple weeks in, we started getting consistently temperatures below freezing. So a lot of the projects I had planned, like canteens and burn bowls and all of that stuff, and clay, I had harvested a bunch of great clay, but you can't, you know, when that stuff freezes solid, like there's no point having an eating bowl that was wooden because my food was freezing on me while I was eating it. So I had to eat out of a metal pot so I could put it back over the fire and thaw it in the middle of my meal, you know, and water vessels were just going to freeze and break. So, but I did a bunch of basketry, and I did like some elaborate squirrel traps that they didn't show that were woven and with fishing line loops and such. I tanned a lot of hides. I turned all of my rabbits into rabbit rope, and I wove with the rabbit rope. And then I had a whole bunch of other projects that were woodworking projects that didn't necessarily get finished, a bunch of birch bark containers. And, I was in the process of making more arrows, without points, but just like field points for taking small game and that kind of thing. And
That's epic. Where was it all based out of? Like, where were you actually doing it?
It was in the Northwest Territories, a region the native name is Kuneve. It's the Lutsulke Dene in that area, but the kind of settler's name for it is Great Slave Lake.
And
we're actually about 70 kilometers south of the Arctic Circle. So it was technically just subarctic, but the Arctic sounds so much more dramatic. Climate wise, it was essentially the Arctic. We would get like half an hour of light on the solstice as opposed to zero light. That's kind of the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Over below the circle.
Wow, that sounds so intense and amazing and beautiful. I can't imagine that kind of cold. Like, I think it's cold here in Australia when it's winter, but it must be so much colder.
Yeah, well, and I had never been anywhere near, I'd lived places that got as cold as it did out there, but I always had a house and a wood stove in those places, and I'd never been anywhere near that far north. I had lived in northern Ontario for a short time, and I thought that was far north, but looking at the map, that's like, you know, nothing compared to where we were.
Yeah, totally. What were the kind of clothes that you had with you?
Well, that was a big focus of mine, was trying to make as much of my own gear as I could to go out. So I had buckskin pants and a fur parka that I had made, and I made a wool shirt for it. And I had, you know, they give you the list of the things that you can bring, you know, this many pairs of socks and 2 pairs of underwear and 2 sets of long underwear and, 2 sweaters and a jacket and a parka. So I put a lot of my time and energy in the prep into making that stuff as opposed to like skills preparation, because I just felt like I You know, I've been doing the skills preparation my whole life, but I will say that I think I was warmer in my homemade gear than most of the people with the modern gear. My stuff, I think, served me a lot better.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. That's interesting that you were a lot warmer with that gear rather than the modern gear. Not many people think that. I can see that, but I guess not many people would equate to that.
And I was nervous, you know, I wasn't certain that that was going to be the case going in, but, you know, making my own gear is what I do. I teach buckskin clothing. So I was like, do I choose maybe the modern gear that might be more functional and gives me a better shot potentially at staying longer winning? Or do I choose to go in line with my values and what I do and to really represent myself and my work in the world? And so that's what I chose. And then, of course, it was totally better in most ways than the modern gear. So, you know,
great.
It was win-win as far as I was concerned.
For sure. So, I mean, with all that perspective and living in that kind of proximity to nature, you must have a much deeper understanding of the role that you as a human play within the natural ecosystem. So what I'd like to get your answer and your perspective on, this is a question that I ask all of my guests, actually. What role do you see humans playing within the natural world and the natural ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you for asking it, because I feel like that is one that people don't look into a lot. You know, it's very us and the rest of the world. And even the fact that a lot of people refer to animals as if they're separate from human and that humans aren't animals is amazing to me. What do you think we are then? So I feel that the natural world longs for the connection that it once had with humans and that it doesn't anymore. You know, there are so many plants that we co-evolved with and that are used to being tended and having relationship. And I really, I mean, I felt that out there. I really felt the land wanting me there and working with me. And particularly, I felt like the land really wanted my surrender. Like when I would have an idea and I was gonna like do a thing and tough it out or this or that, and then realize that wasn't gonna work and then kind of let go my ideas, that's when the land would come in. And, you know, like when I would get more game, or, you know, I would think that like, that's it, I'm getting pulled for being underweight because I know I'm getting so skinny and I'm not getting game. And I would just be like, okay, I let it go, and then something would shift for me. So, you know, very like I felt the land's immediate response to how I was with it. So, you know, that's based on my time and alone, but here too, like I, you know, I have a deep relationship with plants. I studied botany for my master's, and particular plants like willow, for example, that people have been tending and working with for so long, willow does better when it's being tended, and I feel it asking me to interact with it and asking me to cut it. You know, I don't have this idea that I'm killing or harming a thing for harvesting it. I think that a lot of things want that and feel neglected because humans don't recognize them for all of the gifts they have to offer anymore. So to me, the land longs for a relationship with us as much as we long for and need that relationship ourselves.
I love that. I love that perspective, and I love that answer. It's interesting how so many people seem to equate humans and nature as like it's a damaging relationship in a lot of people's minds. Everyone thinks that humans innately damage and destroy nature, but that isn't the case when we really understand and look at it, especially when we look at indigenous and hunter-gatherer cultures. So why do you think so many people see themselves as separate to nature and separate to like being an animal in many ways?
I think because there's a lot more money in convincing people that they can't do for themselves than convincing them that they don't need many modern things, you know, like the capitalism thrives on people not feeling capable and not feeling good enough and taking in things from, you know, buying things to try to give them that sense of wholeness that they're not finding on their own. So, you know, I also think that there's been a lot of particular cultures that have enforced this separation because it served them, you know. Powers that be want to keep people less empowered because then they're going to be more dependent and they're going to be buying into the power structure. You know, capable, independent people who know how to do for themselves are are less likely to listen to the dictates of, you know, monarchs and what have you. So, you know, I think that it's been these little cultural ideas, you know, because there's always been a schism. There's always been cultures that do that and then cultures that stay really connected. But because those cultures that stay connected aren't the ones that tend to wield big power because they don't need to because they're just happy and content without it, then it's those cultures that are looking for power and control that have monopolized more and more over time. So that's part of why I do what I do, is so that people don't feel trapped. You know, all I want to do is empower people to feel whole and healthy on their own. And then they'll realize they don't need, you know, all of this stuff, and they don't need to buy into these power structures, and they don't need to fill their world with so many things.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's great. I'm very much aligned with that and on the same mission. That's awesome. So you run a business called Buckskin Revolution. What are some of the events and courses that you do? Can you give us some examples of some of the stuff that you offer there?
Sure, yeah. And it's, you know, it's shifted a lot over time too. I would say that a huge focus for me for my whole adult life has been traveling to these events, these ancestral skills gatherings, where a lot of instructors come together for a week and a lot of students. And then, you know, we offer a bunch of different classes. So that's been pretty steady. But, you know, for a long time, I was living on an off-grid homesteading and growing most of my food. And I was running courses there about, you know, permaculture and natural building, as well as ancestral skills and just kind of, you know, like sustainable life ways, basically. And these days, in the last couple of years, I've actually been more focused on writing as a way to get, you know, reach more people with the same amount of effort. And that's awesome. And that feels really important. And then also the YouTube thing has been recent, and that basically came from the Alone Show, because before that, you know, I would have been probably really uncomfortable in front of a camera. And with the Alone Show, I realized that I was going to be reaching so many people. And now I had all of this camera training. And so, you know, it was an amazing way to launch into being able to offer so much more to the world. So yeah, I've been focusing recently on ways to reach more people rather than the one-on-one classes, but I do prefer that. You know, that's what I really love, is the more connected teaching. So I'm trying to finish these projects, you know, like some of these book projects, to put out more to the world so that I can get back to the in-person teaching that's more my passion.
Sure. That's awesome. Was there anything else that you wanted to share before we finish?
Not specifically. I mean, I guess I would love to share with people that there are all kinds of ways to plug in to what I'm doing. I have a website and I have a mailing list on that. And so if you sign up for that, then you get to hear more of what I'm doing. And I have, you know, my teaching schedule on my website, and I have a Patreon membership where folks can actually support me, which is amazing because, you know, all of my classes are canceled right now. So I'm not really getting funding other ways, but the Patreon membership is a way to have a lot more interactive content. So people can say, hey, I'm interested in this. And then I can put out a video about that. And I give more regular updates about what I'm up to. So that's been really sweet, as opposed to the YouTube, which is not very personal at all. The Patreon's a, you know, just a sweeter, smaller, more family feeling group. Yeah. There's so many ways to plug into what I'm doing and awesome. Support it and me and spread it around.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll put a link to all the ways that people can connect with you in the show notes. So people can connect, and that'd be great. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. It was really nice. Thanks for sharing your time with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. So Wania is truly an epic human being with so much energy and experience. It was great to have her on. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Share it on Instagram and tag myself and Wania. We'd love to know what you think. So as I mentioned, all the links to connect with Wania are in the show notes. I highly recommend all of the great content she puts out on YouTube. There's so much incredible knowledge that she puts out there for free. So head over there and check that out. A link to that is also in the show notes. If you want to connect with me, simply shoot me through a message via Instagram or Facebook. I'd love to connect. I'm always open to feedback, suggestions, and ideas around potential collaborations. So hit me up. So I hope you're inspired to perhaps start to integrate some of these ideas into your own life. That's why I produce this podcast, to have a direct positive impact on the lives of as many people as possible through spreading these important ideas and messages. So what you can do to show your appreciation is start applying some of these lessons, and also share this podcast and leave us a rating and a review. It goes a long way towards spreading this message that we both know the world needs at this crucial time in history. So thanks for tuning in, and I'll catch you on the next episode.